All right, we're going to be in Genesis chapter. By the way, come to this year's gala. It was a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun, and it's just great to raise money for student missions and always a very cool thing, so make sure you come to it. We're going to be in Genesis 44 today. We're going to continue our sermon series on the life of Joseph. Now, in his book on Joseph called God Meant It for Good, R.T. Kendall has this to say about the text we're going to look at today. He asked the question, are you feeling guilty about anything in your past? Ask yourself this question. What would I do if I had the equivalent opportunity handed to me again? He says, you may say to yourself, if I had my life to live over, I would never do what I did. He continues, he says, but you cannot have your life to live over again. What's done is done. Even the blood of Jesus cannot undo the past. It can forgive the past and can make you accept the fact that God accepts you, but it cannot undo the past. Those are really thought-provoking words. What's done is done and cannot be undone. Even the blood of Jesus cannot undo the past. It can forgive the past, and it can make God accept you despite your past, but it cannot undo the past. What's done is done, and it cannot be undone. Now, I won't ask for a show of hands, but how many of us wish that there's something that we wish we could go back and we could just do it differently? Well, unfortunately, we can't. And you know that, and I know that. You can't go back. But what if you could make it right? What if you could make it right? Well, that's the opportunity that Joseph's brothers are going to get in Genesis chapter 44. If you've been following with us, you know that Joseph's brothers, they committed a terrible misdeed, and they have been haunted by it ever since. But in Genesis 44, they get the opportunity that most of us will never get. They get the opportunity to make it right. Now, last week, we ended with a bit of a cliffhanger. And in fact, it was so bad that I actually, this has never happened to me before, and it actually happened to me twice in 1 week. I actually got two texts during church from people sitting where you are who were frustrated with the way the sermon ended. They were like, how could you end with such a cliffhanger like that, right? Well, I wanted you to come back this week, right? Obviously, that's why I ended with a cliffhanger. Now, I wish I could say that this week was going to be different, but unfortunately, it is not. This week, we are going to end with another cliffhanger. And this time, instead of, this is actually makes the matter worse, this time you're actually going to have to wait 2 weeks to get resolution to the cliffhanger. Because next week, we're going to be joined by Sean Martin, who is going to tell us about the ministry that he works for. It's called Lifewater. If you don't know Sean, there's information about him in your bulletin, but he was on staff here for 8 years, and his family is still part of our church. But Sean, like I said, now works for an organization called Lifewater, and they bring clean water to Uganda, Ethiopia, Cambodia, and Laos. They dig wells and they build latrines for schools so that kids can have a sanitary place to go to the bathroom while they're at school. This is actually one of the biggest reasons why kids drop out of school is because they don't have like a safe, clean, private place to go to the bathroom while they're at school, and it's especially true of young girls. So for the last couple of years, Believers Fellowship has donated the entire Easter offering to projects outside of the walls of our church, and we've used that to do some really cool things in Bolivia in the past, and we're going to continue to do that this year. But also, we've supported other projects through this as well. And so this year, we are going to raise $12,000 to dig a well in Africa so that a village can have clean water. And Sean Martin is going to be here next week to talk about all the details of that. So you don't want to miss it. You want to be here next week to hear Sean. And then the week after that, we are going to start to get some resolution to our Joseph story. But this week, the tension is just going to escalate. So you've been warned. You've been warned. Before we begin, I want to set the stage for the drama of this story. Now, it's, you know, as I was going through this and just asking myself, like, how do I package this so people appreciate what God is trying to tell us in this story? It is very tough to appreciate the passage without understanding everything that's come before, because we've spent 15 chapters building the tension for what happens here. Our series has been about Joseph, and it's called Joseph, but the series actually started with the life of Joseph's dad, a guy named Jacob, also named Israel, who had, he had 12 sons and a daughter by four different women, and it's just this super dysfunctional situation. Now, the drama of our story today, like I said, started perhaps 40 years before the events of the story. It started when Jacob fell in love with a girl named Rachel, but her dad tricked him into marrying her sister, Leah. Jacob didn't love Leah, but he was kind of stuck with her, and he mistreated her. And so all Leah wanted was for her husband to love her, but he didn't. And so in Genesis 29, 31, God sees that Leah's being mistreated, and so he intervenes, and he starts giving her a lot of sons, which in the ancient world was a really, like it was a thing of honor. If you had a lot of sons, it was a thing of honor. And so Leah starts saying to herself, maybe when my husband sees how much honor I'm bringing him by all of these sons that I'm bearing him, maybe then he'll start to love me. But he doesn't. It doesn't work. He still devotes all of his affection to Rachel. And so then Leah says, well, if I'm not going to get any affection from my husband, then I'm just going to give my sister a lot of grief for her infertility. And so she just decides that she's just going to make her feel bad. And so the sisters, they just go back and forth and they bring their kids into it. And it just gets really, really ugly until finally Rachel does have two sons. She has Joseph and she has Benjamin. And then Jacob, he starts showing favoritism to these two kids, these two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. And he ignores all of his other sons and his daughter. And so the 10 brothers, they just start to hate Joseph and Benjamin. And in Genesis 37:4, it says that they hated Joseph and they couldn't even speak a kind word to him. They hated him so much. So they hated him so much that one day they decided they were gonna kill him. And they throw him down in this cistern. And then the only reason they pull him out was so that they could sell him into slavery. And so Joseph's carried off to Egypt as a slave, and then he's falsely accused of a crime, and he ends up in prison. And then while he's in prison, Joseph is able to interpret the dream of the royal baker and of the royal cupbearer, who are also in prison there with him. And so later, when Pharaoh has this really weird dream, the cupbearer says to him, hey, when I was in prison, there was this Hebrew guy in there who could interpret dreams. You should talk to him. And so Joseph, he accurately tells Pharaoh what his dream means. He says, he's got this dream about cows. There's like this gaunt cow and these seven gaunt cows and seven fat cows and seven gaunt cows eat the seven fat cows. And Joseph's like, this is what God tells me it means. We are going to have 7 years of plenty. There's going to be more food than we can eat. That's the seven fat cows. And then after that, there's going to be 7 years of famine. And the 7 years of famine are going to be so bad that everyone's going to forget about the years of plenty. That's why the gaunt cows eat the fat cows. And so he's like, this is what I would do if I were you. I would, during the years of plenty, I'd start stockpiling food so that when the famine comes, we will be the only ones in the world that have food. And Pharaoh thinks, this is a great idea. You're the right person for the job. And so he puts Joseph in, like, he makes him second in command over all of Egypt, and he puts him in charge of grain distribution. And so overnight, Joseph goes from a slave and a prisoner to now like second in command over all of Egypt. He's the second most powerful man in the whole world. And so Joseph, he carries out this grain plan that he had, and wouldn't you know it, but because of the famine, his brothers are forced to come down to Egypt to buy food. And so Joseph comes face to face with these brothers. He hasn't seen them in 13 years. It's 13 years since they sold him into slavery. And because of this, and because now he's like, he's powerful and he's got all this fancy Egyptian clothes and he speaks Egyptian now, like they don't recognize him for who he is. But he recognizes them and he pretends not to know them. Now, not all of the brothers came down to Egypt to buy food because Jacob, the dad, he wouldn't let Benjamin, the youngest, who is Rachel's other kid, remember, he wouldn't let him go because he didn't want anything bad to happen to him. Jacob, he is still like, he's distraught over losing the love of his life, Rachel. He thinks that he's lost Joseph, her oldest son, and now he's like, hey, if anything happened to Benjamin, I'd die. I don't know that I could take it. So he doesn't let Benjamin go. But when Joseph sees all of his brothers and he sees that Benjamin's not there, he really wants to see Benjamin. And so he comes up with this plan where he accuses the brothers of being spies. And he's like, I know why you guys have come down here. You're spying out our weaknesses. And so this is how you can prove to me that you're not spies. I'm going to hold this, your brother Simeon, ransom. And you can go home. And if you bring back this younger brother that you say you have, you can prove to me that you're not spies. And only then will you get to see Simeon again. So the boys go back home, and you know it's not long before they run out of food, and they have to go back to Egypt to get more food. But they can't go back. They can't go back to Egypt without Benjamin. Jacob doesn't want to let him go. So there's a dilemma here. And Judah, he just begs and pleads with his father. He's like, let him go. We can't get food unless we take Benjamin. I'll watch out for him. I promise I won't let anything bad happen to him. And Jacob, he doesn't want to do it, but he realizes this is our only option. So he lets Benjamin go, finally consents. And so all the brothers, they come to Egypt, and they're reunited with Simeon, and Joseph gets to see Benjamin. But he still doesn't know if he can trust his brothers. Because remember, there's bad blood in this family that just goes back years and years and years. He doesn't know if he can trust them. So he decides to set them up. All right. He decides he's going to show favoritism to Benjamin, just as their dad had done to him when he was a little kid. And so he wants to see how his brothers will treat Benjamin. He wants to see if they've changed at all, or if they're going to try to kill Benjamin just like they tried to kill him when he was living at home. He wants to know if time had changed them and if it's safe for them to be reconciled. So he throws this huge party for them. He just like the best food in the land and the best wine in the land. And everyone's, you know, having a great time. But Benjamin is just, he's just got food and stuff just heaped on him to show him honor. And you remember last week I said this was like the Egyptian equivalent of giving Benjamin a coat of many colors. So he wants to stoke the fire, this jealousy that the brothers have inside of them. And so this is what brings us to chapter 44, okay? We see this set up with Benjamin, and we're like, what's going to happen? Are the brothers going to be provoked to jealousy? Are they going to try to kill Benjamin just like they tried to kill Joseph all those years ago? Well, let's see. We are in Genesis 44, like I said, and we're going to start reading in verse 1. It says, then he commanded the steward of the house, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack, and then put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him. Now, as soon as morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys, and they had gone only a short distance from the city. And then Joseph said to his steward, okay, up, follow after the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks and by this that he practices divination? You have done evil in doing this. All right, we'll stop there. All right, so the brothers, they finish this lavish meal that they have with the man, as they call him, the man in Egypt, and now it's time for them to go home. They buy their grain and they're gonna head back to their dad. And they still don't know that the man is really Joseph. But they get Simeon back, Benjamin's doing okay, and they're heading back home with the grain. Only before they leave, Joseph pulls aside his steward, and steward's kind of helped him all along the way, pulling these tricks on his brothers. And he's like, all right, I want you to fill up these guys' sacks with grain, as we said, and just like last time, I want you to put their money back in the sacks, only this time, I also want you to put my silver cup in one of their sacks. And here's the key thing. It's got to be the youngest one's sack, right? Benjamin is the key to all this. You got to put the cup in Benjamin's sack. Now, this cup was a cup that Egyptians would have used for divination. This process is called oleomancy. It's where you mix oil and water, and you kind of look in the cup, and you see how the oil and water mix, and this helps you predict the future, discern omens or something like that. We've actually discovered some of these. I've got a picture of one. This one's not made out of silver, but that is a a lotus leaf Egyptian oleomancy cup. So if you could imagine that in silver, maybe that's what Joseph's cup looked like. But remember, you know, Joseph is in the position that he's in because he was able to interpret Pharaoh's dream. Remember that? That's how he got that job. And so, you know, he's very vocal about the fact that God gave him the interpretation. He's very upfront about that. But the Egyptians, they think that, like, he's some kind of wizard or something like that. Like, he's got a reputation in Egypt. Like, this guy knows things. We don't know how he knows them, but he knows them. And so he sets his brothers up. He's like, he tells his steward, he's like, put my magic cup in the guy's bag. And then he sends them off and says, like, okay, go return home to your dad. And then after they've left and they're gone for a little bit, he tells his steward, he's like, okay, I want you to get up. I want you to follow them. And I want you to confront them for stealing the cup. Now, again, why is he doing all this? Well, Joseph he's forgiven his brothers. We know that. He's forgiven his brothers. But he doesn't know yet if he can trust them. He doesn't know yet if it's safe for them to be reconciled. He's like, have they changed? Or are they still the kind of guys who would try to kill me or throw me into a cistern or anything like that or sell me into slavery? And so he has a plan here. He wants to see what kind of men they are. All right, let's see how his plan plays out. Starting in verse 6. Now, when the steward overtook them, he spoke to them these words, and they said to him, why does my lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your lord's house? Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we will also be my lord's servants. And he said, all right, let it be as you say. He who was found with it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent. And then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. And then they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. All right, so the steward, like, he catches up to them and he does all of the things that Joseph told him to do. And he's like, hey, why would you steal my master's cup? Didn't you know, like, this is his magic cup? Like, he's some kind of wizard, man. He knows things. How did you think that you were going to get away with this stuff? And he's like, and my master was so kind to you. He threw this feast for you. He gave you, I mean, we're in the middle of a famine and he's killing the fatted calf to bless you guys. Why would you do this to him? That's not right. It's repaying evil for good. And the brothers are like, hey, slow down here. We didn't steal anything from your master. They're like, remember the last time when we bought grain and we came home and we discovered that the money had been put back in our bags? What did we do? We brought that money back and we tried to pay you double this time. Now, if we wanted to steal from you, we would have stolen from you last time. That's just not the kind of men we are. We brought the money back. We're not the kind of guys who would steal. And they're so sure of their innocence that they're like, okay, here's the deal. You can search our bags. And if you find the cup, your master's cup, in any of our bags, wherever you find it, that person's going to die. Okay, right here, right in this spot, we'll kill him. And the steward's like, oh, okay, slow down here, boss. All right, nobody's getting murdered here. If somebody's got the cup, remember, because he knows somebody does have the cup. Whoever has the cup, you're coming back to Egypt, and they're going to be enslaved, a slave in my master's house. Now, let's pause here for a second, because we know something as we read it. We know something that the brothers don't. We know that Benjamin has the cup. So think about this story from that angle. Remember the last passage, Joseph gave Benjamin 5 times as much as his brothers. So he's like giving him the coat of many colors, right? Then the brothers go out in the wilderness. Then a messenger is sent to them, and there's a problem. Somebody stole the cup. And we don't know who, but someone stole it. And then what's their first idea? They say, no, let's kill him. But then somebody intervenes. This time it's the steward, and he says, no, let's not kill him. Let's sell him into slavery to Egypt. What's going on here? We're replaying the events of chapter 37. It's the same exact story, only this time Benjamin is playing the role of Joseph. We're doing it again. So the brothers, they don't know any of this is going on, but they're about to find out. So they put down their sacks so that the steward can check them out. And they start with Reuben because he's the oldest. And they search his bag. And there's no cup. And he's like, see, I'm not a thief. And he's vindicated. And so next is Simeon. And they search his bag. And there's no cup. And he's like, see, I'm not a thief. And he's vindicated. And then next is Levi. And they search his bag. I suspect it was a denim bag, but they search his bag. Sorry, that was terrible. Terrible. But no cup. He's like, see, I'm not a thief. And he's vindicated. Next is Judah. No cup. Not a thief. Next is Dan. No cup. Not a thief. Then Naphtali. Then Gad. And Asher, Issachar, and Zebulun. No cup, no cup, no cup, no cup, no cup. They're not thieves. And finally, there's one son left, Benjamin. And it's his turn to open his bag. And Judah, his mind goes back to it goes back to his childhood. And he remembers this day when he was just a kid, and they were living with their grandpa, Laban, and one day his dad comes home and he's all panicky and he's like, guys, we gotta leave right now. And Judah, like, he didn't understand. He's like, I don't understand why we have to leave our home. Why do we have to leave our friends? Why do we have to leave our family? I like it here. But his mom and his dad, they both seem pretty scared. So he doesn't ask any questions. He's like, I'm just gonna pack my bags and we're gonna go. And so his family, like, they leave in haste as if they're fleeing for their lives. And then back then, when he was a kid, just as right here, an angry mob catches up to them and accuses them of stealing something. And that time, it was one of Grandpa Laban's household gods. And accusations were made. And tempers flared. And bags were searched. And nothing was found. But that's not because nothing was stolen. Because that time, Benjamin's mother, Rachel, actually had stolen the household gods. She just knew how to hide them. And so this hush falls over the brothers as Benjamin pulls off his bag and sets it on the ground. And Judah, he thinks about his childhood and he remembers what Benjamin's mom did. And he offers up this little prayer to God. Dear God, please do not let there be a cup in the boy's bag. And they open the bag, and there's the cup. And the brothers, they just lose it. They're like, man, it is just like one of Rachel's kids to do this. Like mother, like son. That son of a Baptist, as Gary would say, right? And they're just freaking out and they start tearing their clothes and they're like, oh, this is exactly what Dad said was gonna happen. You know, he didn't wanna let Benjamin go to Egypt. He knew that something was bad was gonna happen to him. And so now, you know, if we come home without Benjamin, Dad, he is literally going to die. And so they're like, man, why did we have to bring this guy? He always ruins everything. Why did we have to tell the man about him? Why didn't we just keep our mouths shut? You know, how could God let this happen to us? And then it hits him. It's because of what we did to Joseph. It's all coming back on us. God is punishing us for what we did to Joseph. That's what they think. And so the brothers, they just despair at what Benjamin's gotten himself into. They're like, oh, you know, and Benjamin, he's like swearing to him. He's like, I didn't do it. Somebody framed me for this. I'm innocent. And they don't believe him, but they're like, okay, we're just going to go back with you to Egypt and we're just going to have to fix this. And they're just going to have to beg the man to let Benjamin go. Let's see how that goes. Verse 14. Now, when Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. Then they fell before him to the ground, and Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that I am a man or that a man like me can practice divination? And Judas said, what are we going to say? What shall we say, my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out of the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are your Lord's servants, both we and also he whose hand the cup has been found. But he said, this is Joseph speaking, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father. So the brothers, they go back to Joseph, or to the man in Egypt, and they fall down and they just beg for him, his Benjamin's release. And Joseph, he's still testing them. They still don't know it's him. And he's like, what did you guys think that you were doing? Like, don't you know, like I'm a wizard. I know things. God shows me stuff. Did you think you could steal my cup? And he's like playing this whole thing up. He's just trying to sound as scary as possible just to freak his brothers out. And Judah's like, look, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. The boy, he swears he's innocent. I don't know how that cup got into his bag. But I do know why. I do know why. It's because God is punishing us. You see, yeah, Benjamin's guilty, but we're all guilty because we did a terrible thing a long time ago. And yeah, Benjamin deserves to be locked up for what he did, but really we all should be locked up. And so why don't you just, you know, if you're going to lock up Benjamin, just lock us all up in the same cell with him. And Joseph's like, no. No, he's like, look, I don't know what it is that you guys did all those years ago. And frankly, I don't care. That's between you and God, and I'm not going to punish you for something that has nothing to do with me. My concern is with your lying, thieving, cowardly brother. The rest of you, you seem different than him. Like, you understand the ways of the world. Him, like, he seems sheltered. He seems spoiled. You know, when I asked you to bring him here to prove that you weren't spies so that you could get Simeon back, like, You did it. And not only did you do that, but you brought me back extra money because of some misunderstanding. Man, you guys seem like honest men. But not your brother. Like, he's spoiled. And I think it's time for him to be held accountable for something for once in his life. The rest of you, you're honorable men. And I don't want to punish you. Go home to your dad in peace. Take your grain. Tell him what happened. He'll understand. This is all on Benjamin. He's a bad apple, getting what he deserves. And so Joseph, he gave Judah and his brothers an opportunity to be free from their father's favoritism forever. Okay, Rachel, she's dead. Joseph, presumably dead. And now with Benjamin out of the picture, you know, all of those years of being overlooked and taken for granted could be over. With Rachel and her boys gone, like, Jacob would have no choice but to love them. They can walk away, and they don't even need like a phony cover story about wild animals or anything like that. Benjamin made his bed, he can lie in it. So what are they gonna do? Are they gonna sell Benjamin into slavery like they did to Joseph all of those years ago? Well, let's see. Verse 18. I've lost my place. Okay. Then Judah went up to him and he said, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. You see, my Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children. And his father loves him. And then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. And then you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again. And when we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And when our father said, go again and buy us a little food, we said, If our youngest brother goes with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. And then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I've never seen him since. If you take this one also from me, and harm happens to him, you will bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. Now, therefore, this is Judah still speaking, as soon as I came to your servant, my father, and if the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he'll die. And your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. But if your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I don't bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant for my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. They don't take the bait. They won't leave Benjamin behind, no matter how much he deserves it. Judah just couldn't stand to see the effect that would have on their father. And so Judah's like, he says to Joseph, he's like, you have no idea how much this boy means to his dad. I mean, his mother had two sons, one's dead, and he's the only one he has left. I want you to think about that. For how hard must that have been for Judah to say? Judah, he's all he has left. If he loses Benjamin, he has nothing. The rest of us mean nothing to him. Judah says, if I don't bring this boy home, my dad is going to die, and I don't want to see that happen. So here's the deal. Take me instead. I'll be your slave. Let Benjamin go back to his dad. I will pay for his crimes. And Joseph says, we're going to have to wait 2 weeks to hear what Joseph says. That's where we're stopping today. I warned you, that was literally the first thing I said today, okay? We're going to have to wait 2 weeks. So we're not going to resolve the drama this week, but there's a lot we can learn from this passage. What is it that we see here? Here's the big thing that we learned today, right? People can change. People can change. Joseph's test, he wasn't trying to see if he could forgive his brothers. Like, we already know that he's forgiven. When he names his two boys, I can't remember exactly what their names mean, but they pretty much mean, I've forgiven the past, and I'm moving on from here, okay? So we know he's forgiven. That's settled. This is a test to see whether or not it's safe for him to be reconciled with his brothers, because he doesn't know if his brothers are just going to try to kill him again. He doesn't know if they've changed at all. And so he gives his brothers here a shot at redemption. Remember what I said at the very beginning of this message? I said, what's done cannot be undone. What's done cannot be undone. It can be forgiven, but not undone. But in Genesis 44, Joseph gives his brothers a chance to make things right. Ever since they sold him into slavery, they have just been haunted by the sound of his screams when he was down in that cistern, when they were eating lunch and just pretending like they couldn't hear him. It's just haunted them. And throughout all the chapters since then, anytime anything bad happens to them, they're like, this is God punishing us for what we did to Joseph. Like, they can't let it go. It's haunting them. I wonder how many times they thought, man, I wish we could take that back. I wish I could go back to that moment because I would do things differently. Now, most of us, like, we don't get that chance. We just spend the rest of our lives wondering, if I could do it differently, would I? Have I changed? But Joseph's brothers, they got the opportunity. And this time, they did it right. So Joseph, he just rigged the case against Benjamin so that his brothers, they could have walked away cleanly. He set the stage so it's like, you guys, you can go home. You don't have to lie. Like, you have a clear out here, and they could have taken it. In fact, it would have made perfect sense for them to do that. It was the smart thing to do. But the brothers, they recognized the opportunity for what it was. It was an opportunity to make up for what they did all those years ago. And this time, they did the right thing. People can change. People can change. So I have two challenges for you related to this passage. First, you can change. So don't give up hope. Now, the forgiveness that is ours in Jesus is 100% based on the work of Jesus on the cross and not on our ability to get anything right. Okay, God accepts us because he accepts Jesus, not because we're doing things right. But remember, Jesus didn't just die on the cross for your sins, he also rose from the dead. And the cross reminds us that we're forgiven and our debts have been paid. But the resurrection reminds us that we're new creations and we're not the same. People can change. Even if you've failed 1,000 times, keep going. You don't have to fail 1,001 times. People can change. Second, others can change. So don't give up on them. People can change. Don't give up on them. Now, in a moment, we're going to transition to our time of response, and band's going to come back up, and we've got 2 more songs that we're going to sing. While we do that, we're also going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. And so if you're new here and you're like, what's going on? Know that you're free to come forward, even if it's your first week here, but you're also free to stay where you are and just worship if that's what you'd rather do. Just know if you don't come forward, you may have to step aside and let others come forward who are in your row. But while we sing and while we celebrate the Lord's Supper, I'd also love to pray for you. I'll be standing right back there in that corner. Gary is going to be back there in that corner. He'd love to pray for you as well. So if there's anything going on, big or small, we'd love to pray for you. But before we get there, there's one more point that I want to make, and that is the theological point of this passage. We've been looking at the drama of the story and all the different characters and the people and what they do and say and how they interact with each other and how we can get inspiration from them, and all of that is good. But this passage also teaches us something about God, and so I don't want us to close today without looking at that. And we've already shown our cards with regard to the main point of the Joseph's narrative. We've already said what that is, that God has a purpose in everything that happens to Joseph. At the very end of the story, he recognizes it and he says it to his brothers. He's like, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And we see more evidence of that here in chapter 44. Psalm 133:1 says, behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. God is the God of peace, and his desire is for people to live in unity. And this is true of family members, and it's especially true in the family of God. And so we see that, like, this was not the case in Jacob's family. Jacob was a broken man. He was a bad husband, he was a bad dad, and right from the beginning of the story, we're left with this question, all right, if this guy Jacob, who's also known as Israel, is supposed to be the father of the nation of Israel, like, how is this gonna work? He's terrible, and all of his sons hate each other. How is this family gonna become the holy people of God? Well, people change. Joseph's clearly changed. He's matured. And he's not the only one who's changed. Judah's changed. Reuben's changed. Even Simeon and Levi have changed. Think about this. How would Benjamin and Judah's relationship be different after this passage? God is using the events of this story to bring peace. He's bringing these boys together. He's teaching them how to love one another and how to live together in unity. This Joseph narrative is telling us that none of our sins, not even Jacob's sins, not even his family's sins, could thwart God's plan for them in making them into a holy nation. And none of your sins can thwart what God is doing in your life. God is at work reconciling to us himself and to each other, and nothing will thwart that plan. Nothing. So let's remember that as we remember Jesus, and we look forward to the day when we are fully reconciled to God and fully reconciled to one another.